सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है।
वेलकम टू सोच विचार। या गुड, ओके, वेलकम टू सोच विचार। टुडे वी आर गोइंग टू रिटर्न अगेन टू सिटीज। रीजन बीइंग सिटीज आर व्हाट पीपल आर एंड सिटीज आर वेयर पीपल लिव। आई हैव गॉट अ वंडरफुल यंग अर्बनोलॉजिस्ट हु इज trying to carve out her name in cities. The name is Sara Nadeem Ahmed. She is with, has been with the urban unit, has been with Alif Alan, has been with a number of things, although she's young in years. So welcome, Sara. Sara,
thank
can you.
You
please introduce yourself, tell us something about yourself before we begin?
Yes, thank you for having me. Very excited to be doing this podcast with you. I've become a fan of podcasts because of you again. I, like you said, my name is Sara Nadeem Ahmed. I'm an urbanist by training. I have a background in urban studies and then a building and design for development background. I have been working in the development sector for a number of years now, and most recently I was working with the Punjab government at the urban unit, where I was doing urban planning analysis for them as part of a very robust team of people that they have over there. So that's been a good kind of understanding of how the government is doing the urban planning, the planning approach. So yes, that's...
So when you say that you were trained as an urbanist, what does that mean?
What it means is that I have a interdisciplinary kind of background. I'm not an architect by training. I'm not a planner by certification. I'm an urban designer. And urban design kind of straddles both these fields, and it's been under a lot of question over the years. And the, you know, my alma mater, the University College of London, where I did my master's, the Bartlett School of Architecture, released a very interesting report on this topic in 2001 with the Design Council of the United Kingdom. And in it, they were researching urban design as a profession and what all, how it adds value and what, you know, what does it do. And that's why urban designers kind of, you know, they call themselves urbanists a lot now. And urbanists are people that that do a bit of architecture, they do a bit of planning, they do a bit of policy, and they're city thinkers.
But forgive me, Sarah, I don't think we need you here.
Well, you know,
because
I
Because quite
feel,
frankly, nobody knows what urban design is here, or do
yes.
they? Or am I wrong?
Well, you know, there is a lot of... I think there's a constant reevaluation of its need over here. And it's because we've become, or I don't know if it's necessarily just here, and it's not just localized to the Pakistani experience, but I think it's in the global south as a whole, that civil engineering is something people are more familiar with. Architecture, obviously, people are familiar with. Planning is still a newer field. Design is even newer within that. So I feel, as you said, I feel unneeded myself over here, and that's why I've kind of jumped different jobs, different areas, because urban design, I feel, is out of the conversation. Nobody's discussing it. Nobody discusses its value, its benefits. The costs of bad design are incurred by all of us as citizens, but nobody really talks about it in the government. You know,
in fact, would I be correct to say that what we need is less planning, more design?
Well, yes, I think my bias aside, I think that is very correct, because the user experience in the city is you know, the people that are making these decisions are not representative of the users of the city, the everyday user. We are very removed from the experience on the street. The person taking the public transport, you know, they are not kept in mind by the designers of that public transport, by the implementers of those projects. You know, just how well is our city working for people? Are our cities catering to everybody that inhabits them? So in that sense, I think design is a very important part of the debate.
So tell us, what do you think is wrong or right with the design of Lahore?
Oh, what a big question. Currently, I feel Lahore is not functioning for all its user groups. But what's right, there's the wrongs we can list, you know, in a lot of ways. But I do want to make a point that there is a lot of things that are moving in the right direction. First and foremost, the fact that we have been seeing such a big, you know, push towards public transport is a very good design, is a good, you know, kind of sign, let's say. However, the way that we're designing it, you know, there's much to be desired. The other thing that we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of research coming out now. There is a research push towards in terms of how we're planning for our cities, what we're doing. That's a good sign that people are paying attention to research on women's mobility, research on what are the you know, how people are kind of using their cities, what are the kind of jobs out there. There's a lot of data evidence that's being pushed out. These are good signs. However, the everyday experience is still, you know, we are, even ourselves, when we're having this conversation, the people that we need to reach out to, the people whose voices need to be heard, they're still not being heard. And that is part of how we're designing for our cities. We're still designing in an exclusive way. It's not an inclusive way of design. Some steps are being taken in the right directions, but there's a lot that can be improved, because city making is a constant process. It's not something that's finite, you know? So, I mean, there's, our road networks still need to be integrated. Our transport systems need to be integrated. Right now, currently, the Orange Line project, very hot, you know, topic. A very important project, transformative in its scale, transformative for the city, but how well is it being integrated into into this into the world that we're into, you know, for the people? Where are the stations located? Are the stations being connected to the streets? How well are they being connected to the streets? Are the pedestrians, are the over the pedestrian bridges, are they going to be used by everybody? Are they convenient? There's a lot of these, you know, these small questions that come into play here. Are the sidewalks being made? How are we making sure that the civic awareness of, you know, basically how are we going to use this infrastructure? How well have we thought about these decisions? The end-to-end implementation of projects, you know, is so too much to be desired.
What would you do? I mean, how, teach us something about design, because I don't know anything about city design. So how would you go about thinking about it? And
well, you see, how would I go about thinking about it?
I mean, how should we Lahoris begin to think about city design? How should we begin to change?
I think just way, you know, when you're in the city, start thinking about the human scale, right? How well is the city work? Any one place, you walk out of a plaza, for example, how difficult or easy was it for you to get to that plaza in the first place? What was the mode of transport that you took? Once you took your car, for example, where did you park? How long? How was it easy to find parking? How long was the walk? Was the walk obstructed in any way? You know, these are small. Just the way that you've used this space is your most fundamental understanding of design. There's a book that I like to refer to a lot called A Pattern Language, and it's by
Sydney Alexander.
Yes.
Beautiful
and,
book.
You know, there's a lot of texts that kind of talk about how an everyday, you know, just your layman can talk about design. So now, just the way your cities work, just the way your streets work, Jane Jacobs talked about this a lot. What is the street doing in Lahore? Do we have a street culture? Why do we not have a street culture? A lot of people kind of offhandedly make a remark saying that, oh, because this is a hot city. There are a lot of hot cities in the world. People still use those cities. They don't just kind of retreat to, like, you know, a capsule of a vehicle and all that. But, you know, I digress. Going back to the how to understand design, it's a very individual process. How well does the city, when you use it, how well does it work for you? That's how you understand its design. Are the signs working for you? Can you find the right sign? Can you park your car? Can you always, what if you, I'm a person who doesn't drive. I don't know how to drive. A lot of people make fun of me for this, but it's a constant navigation of the city as somebody who doesn't drive. If I have to use public transport, can I find the right public transport? Do I feel safe in that public transport? Is it convenient for me to take it? Is it taking into account my needs of the, you know, my everyday kind of transport requirements? So design is a personal understanding. There's obviously the conceptual, theoretical element to it, but that would be a longer conversation. I kind of like to focus on how we're experiencing our everyday urban realm.
So how would you evaluate our city, Lahore? How would you think about, for example, from your point of view, let's say if today the mayor or the chief minister called you in and asked you to give an evaluation report on Lahore and give your recommendations of where should we go, what would you say?
Well, firstly, I'd be very glad if that happens. I would ask for or kind of advocate for a criteria, an evaluation criteria based on the following points. Now, this is in no way kind of new radical thinking or anything. These are understood things in urban design and planning literature. Mm-hmm. I would ask them to evaluate the city on its character, mm-hmm. in its continuity, in its enclosures, mm-hmm. In space, in the quality of its public realm, how well it's performing, mm-hmm. In its ease of movement, mm-hmm. its legibility, mm-hmm. its adaptability to different uses, mm-hmm. and its diversity. Now, these are broad kind of criteria.
But please explain all those. Even I
will.
Understand them.
Huh. Now, when I say character, mm-hmm. you know, how well does the city respond and reinforce its culture and its development? Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. the built environment. Mm-hmm. What is the character when you land in Lahore as a first timer? Mm-hmm. How does the city react to you? How do you react to the city? What kind of message is the city giving? Right, mm-hmm. every place has a distinct feel. Mm-hmm. What is the distinct feel? What is the identity? Mm-hmm. So that's your character, right? The character mm-hmm. of places. Mm-hmm. We travel different places in the world and we come back and say, yeah, you know, what a great place it was. The streets, there was music there. There was this, there was that. That's the character of a place, right? Mm-hmm. So evaluate the character. What are the messages that our city mm-hmm. sends? You know, mm-hmm. then. To when we say continuity and enclosure in urban design, right, we talk about street frontages, mm. We talk about clearly defined public and private areas, you know, what are the, how well are the streets planned? How well are your developments planned? Mm. We need to evaluate that part of the city. What is the formal realm? Where is the informal realm? How do they interact? What are the rules and regulations that bind them and or don't bind them? Mm. Then, again, going back to quality, mm. are public spaces, the routes, are they attractive? Are they safe? Are they cluttered? Mm. Are they working effectively? Are mm. elderly people using them? Are disabled people using them? Are women using them? Mm. Are children using mm. them? How is the public realm being kind of, you know, adapted to? And who do we see in the public mm. realm? Mm. Then transport and movement comes in. I would like to evaluate this city in terms of its accessibility. You know, how do we get around in this city? How, if I was to just get up one day, I didn't have a car or something, how could I get from point A to point B? There are a lot of obstacles to everyday transport here. So that is a big evaluation criteria for a city. Then legibility. Does it provide recognizable intersections? Does it provide recognizable landmarks, signage? You know, is the city legible to all? Can we understand? Or is it easy to get lost here? That's an evaluation criteria of how well you've designed for the city. Again, I don't think these are newer concepts. Maybe we do need to simplify them for everyday audiences. And that's why if the chief minister or, you know, those kind of decision-making bodies brought us in to chit-chat and talk to us, I would ask them to help younger practitioners, help them develop a localized, a contextual evaluation criteria. Okay? Now, what I've just talked about, these are kind of fluffy things, you know, that you find in literature, but we need local contextual evaluation criteria. So I would like to come up with assessments. They've been done in different parts of the world. We absolutely need to understand how well our cities are working.
But what you're saying basically is that city is a very complex phenomenon.
And
we must, it's in a sense, it's my life, your life.
Yes.
We're all living in a city. And what you're saying is that we must try and confront the complexity of the city.
Yes.
From the atmosphere to the quality of life to everything.
Not be dogmatic about it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, what happens is too often in the World Bank or the donor parlance, city is how you make investments. So it's the roads and it's a
mega infrastructure.
It's the sanitation and it's the, you know, whatever. And when they talk to me, I always tell them, hey, you've taken care of me from the neck down.
Yes.
But you've forgotten about this. The head.
Brain, yes.
And it's here where I live, not in the physical sense. That's where my soul is.
Absolutely.
So you've got to reach the soul. And that's the point that you're making.
Yes.
That's a very valid consideration. And you're absolutely right. The one thing that I keep telling people, and the finance minister is a good friend of mine. We used to be together in the economics team. So we used to go abroad. And each time we went abroad, he would yell to me and say, you know, why do we feel so happy when we come to a place like London or Dubai? And why do we feel so depressed when we go to Pakistan?
Yes.
So that captures your character thing.
Yes.
Well, what is it about us that's not working? I mean, take...
The atmosphere and the things. I think there is a bureaucracy in our decision making that really needs to be intervened. where somebody needs to switch it up a little, as we call it, you know. The current way of doing things is dated. It is rigid to new ideas. Not just to new ideas, but ideas that have worked, you know, or have proven to work. They are very happy to import design and planning models when they're donor funded, when the donor kind of, you know, imposes them on us. And they will argue, they're very good at selling their projects. You know, they'll say that, no, these are rooted in best practices. But I would really like to, I disagree.
Question.
You know, our projects are not rooted in best practice. They may be taking... There's a calm Macau mentality, you know, that you take a project, but let's just implement it. But there's no participatory element to the, how these decisions were made. They're arbitrary. There's a lot of politics to it. They come between election cycles, you know, things are just kind of done. So I just feel that the current way of doing, of city building and city making is not correct.
Look, our current paradigm, correct me if I'm wrong, our current paradigm is that we have to build houses.
Yes.
And that also for people like us, right? The houses have to be 1 canal, 10 marla at most, 5 marla, and 5 marla, even a 5 marla house now in DHA is costing almost 2 crores.
Yes.
I don't know who can afford it,
yes.
Right? And I keep telling kids like yourself in audiences, guys, you're never going to have a house in this country because you will never be able to afford it.
Yes.
So we have these things, and then we have these lovely roads. I mean, the roads here are better than New York now.
Yes.
The roads here are better
absolutely.
Than London. I mean, absolutely lovely roads on which you can drive on nice cars.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the paradigm, and I think people seem to like it.
Yeah, we've created these islands, these private housing scheme islands, then, you know, then these long, like you said, very nice paved roads to connect those islands.
With no sidewalks.
No sidewalks.
Huh.
Again, what is the message that you're sending there? The message you're sending
and you're
there
learning
is
not
that,
to, and you're
exactly.
not learning to drive.
Yes, because, I mean, that's, you know, I don't know how long this is a practical decision. Maybe this is the year I absolutely learn how to drive. But the thing is that, you know, who are we designing the city for? Or what are the message there? The message we're sending is, are you a homeowner yet? No, you're not. Are you a car owner yet? No, you're not. Do you have mobility? Do you own, you know, do you own a vehicle? Those are the aspirations that the design of the city is asking you to have of yourself, of your life. And I don't think that's sustainable. We do this to our city. We make one private housing scheme in Raivind, then we make one in the DHAs, then we make one in other, you know, all these different... The city is now this smorgasbord of private housing societies. And at the same time, you know, I have over here this Punjab private housing schemes and land subdivision rules of 2010. Now, nobody consults these documents. Nobody goes through them to see how can we improve upon them. Mm. How do we get my kind of grouse, if you will, is that how do we get to influence these policy papers, these regulations, these rules that are, you know, very much enforced onto us. Inko badalna hai ab. Purane ho chuke hain. A lot of them have not, they haven't worked for the city, you know. We are consuming so much unnecessary resources in the city because of the way that we are providing housing. Now, don't get me wrong. No planner or designer worth his or her salt will say that housing, the city must not provide housing. The city has to provide housing. But the current model of housing provision in Lahore particularly is not sustainable.
No, but hang on. City has to provide housing. What do you mean by that? I mean, city is providing houses to people, rich people. But what about the poor people? They also deserve housing.
They absolutely do.
And I don't think, have we zoned a city for poor housing at all?
No, not yet. You know, but at the same time, I've heard chit-chatter about zoning regulations needing to be changed in the coming years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's excellent. So this conversation, now we learn by trial and error here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen that the zoning absolutely needs to be changed up. Again, along your transport corridors, you need mixed-use development. You need to densify this. I can't say that enough. You know, no planner will say that enough. But how are we doing that? How are we making those decisions? Again, that's where I go back to the bureaucracy. We have people that are just upholding the status quo currently, inhabiting offices, you know, that are... That make these decisions. Those decision makers need to interact with a younger group of practitioners. Criticism is productive these days. They need to have that approach, and we need to really kind of let new voices come in. And that's something that I personally have really struggled with, and I have a lot of peers, colleagues that struggle with that as well. We don't find jobs in the right places, and when we do find jobs in the right places, those jobs make us do things that are completely irrelevant. They don't let us use our skill sets, you know. So going back again,
but when you said densify, What do you mean? How do you densify?
How do you densify? You set...
I mean, right now we are sitting in Lahore, mm-hmm. right? In near GOR.
Yeah.
You live in Cantonment. We are very nearby. This is, quite frankly, now the heart of Lahore.
Is it?
Where? How are we densifying?
Well, you have to declare... This is where zoning comes in. You need to declare certain districts. There have to be central business districts. There have to be entertainment districts and all that. Ye concepts hote hain, but hamari ispe, the interpretation of it is a little problematic. We're making industrial estates, education cities. We're making, you know, things like that. This is not what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. We can't misunderstand that. You have to regulate certain areas as mixed use. You know, they're going to be commercial, they're going to be residential, they're going to be educational, health, whatever. There's different areas have to be allowed to have different uses. Currently, that's not the space.
Okay.
But what we like to do is, you know, over here, this is just housing. We should only have housing over here and not have anything else. You densify by creating mixed-use development, by promoting mixed-use development.
So you have to go higher.
You have to go higher.
You have to go flats. Your
floor area ratio has to be reconsidered. Now, LDA is a big stakeholder in all this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
LDA needs to revisit how it does planning and design.
Mm-hmm.
It's a difficult body to, you know, kind of get your leg into. But once you do, I think that's where a lot of change can happen. So now you densify by changing your building regulations in Lahore. The zoning bylaws, the building bylaws need to be re...
Explain those, please.
Now, when you're a developer in the city, for example, the concept of mixed ownership has not been implemented yet in Lahore.
Now, mixed ownership means?
One plaza, different floors can have different owners. You see, now right now that doesn't work. Right now, one plaza is owned by one person. Mm-hmm. Now, he or she is the... You know, they make the decision of what goes in there. When you densify in a city...
And that it'll have different uses too.
It can.
Yeah, it can have, for example, commercial and residential space in the same plaza.
And that's what we need. We're seeing a little bit of that happening in Gulberg. We're seeing... And it's been happening in an unrecognized way in different parts of Lahore as well. You know, in the inner city, we see that a lot. The walled city of Lahore has been doing that for time eternal.
Yeah.
So that kind of... And that's the original... ethos of the city. The city has always been, like that. And we need to now... But what happens is, as we move away from the old city, we move away from these areas, it gets, you know, more and more spread out. Now, the building bylaws and the private housing schemes, these regulations, they need to be revisited. Now, that's again, you know, we can go into their nitty-gritties. It's a longer conversation, but...
Give us a broad overview. What do you think needs to be revisited? What do you think needs to be changed?
Now, what I feel needs to be changed is the city through its regulations and its zoning needs to encourage and promote, again, mixed-use development, and it needs to get people out of wanting to live in canals and have them want to live in even, you know, let's go back to the Marla scale. Let's go back to the apartment living concept.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, we appreciate it when it happens in other parts of the world, but over here we're like, nahi yaar. Apartment mein to nahi rehna, ghar mein rehna. Why? We need to enable people to buy or rent property that is convenient, that is at an apartment scale, go high.
Mm.
You know, our cities are now, you know, when I think about this, as a young person, I don't want to be living in a house. I want to have my own apartment. Encourage people, create more apartments, densify, go higher. Go higher. And one of the biggest things that we need to allow is we need to allow our cities to go higher. And right now, there's a lot of issues that come into play there. And those issues need to be revisited. And at the same time, we need to develop corridors, right? Different, like, we have all these now public transport projects that have been put in. We have the BRTS, we have the Orange Line coming along now. What's happening along them? We should be seeing densities, you know, kind of increasing alongside. So I feel these rules and regulations that are all in place, they need a change. They need to be made publicly available so that they can be publicly discussed, and we can kind of, you know, go into what's working and what is.
When you say that we don't like to live in flats, is that correct? Because I think about it, and I often tell people that we have more flats in DHA than houses.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that or not?
I don't think we have more flats in DHA than houses. They're now changing it in the... What do you mean by that?
Very simple. Every rich family has servant quarters.
Ah, like that, yes.
And servant quarters are people living in flats. They're living in one room virtually, right? Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, even today, there are more people living in flats than in houses. Mm-hmm. Because every house has three or four servants or two or three servants, whatever.
Yeah.
So there are always more servants in the, mm-hmm. than the people living in the house. So there are more families in flats.
Mm-hmm.
So by definition, so I've had this conversation with many bureaucrats, and they keep telling me our culture is not living. I said, except you don't see those poor people living in that squalor.
Yeah.
Now, they could benefit a lot if they got a flat. Yeah. And they'd be much happier if they got a flat. And some of them, for example, have bought a property. I know mm-hmm. lots of poor people who bought a property maybe 30, 40 years ago. Their grandfather bought a property in Baghbanpura or mm-hmm. Sanda or wherever, Kot Lakhpat or something. And they have this property where their family is living. It's a three-marla, two-marla thing mm-hmm. where the family is living, two-bedroom, three-bedroom house. And there are about 10 families living there because my family has grown. The grandfather bought it now.
Yes.
And all of them don't know where else to go. Now, when I talk to them and they tell me very clearly that, hey, if only we could go higher. Once they understand, they say, if only we could go higher.
Yes.
We could build 10 apartments on this property and all of us could be comfortable.
Absolutely.
But they are not allowed to do that because I don't know why. Can you explain that to me?
I actually can't. Now, this is, you know, when we kind of propose structures that are in height. Now, for example, clearly something is not working. You look over, you know, at the skyline of Gulberg, if you say there's a lot of halted high-rise projects that you'll see at a glance. Why are they halted? There's a lot of issues in project continuity here and project, you know, just even conceptualization because the laws don't, or the regulations, they obstruct you, right? They stop you from proceeding. Why does that happen? I really don't have a logical answer to this. All I know is that the way that the city is being planned currently is not in tune with the needs of the city.
So essentially the point is, right now the State Bank estimates we've got 10 million houses shortfall. 10 million houses are needed.
Yes.
And yet we are not allowing houses to be made. We think that houses will go all the way to Kasur or even beyond Sialkot or something. I mean, doesn't that make the city unmanageable?
Absolutely.
And totally unaffordable?
Absolutely.
If I live in Kasur and migrate to Lahore, how can
that
work?
The concept of city boundaries has been lost. Now look at Lahore. Lahore is a metropolitan corporation. Mm-hmm. The LDA has too far a reach, to be honest, too far a control. Mm-hmm. And why is this being allowed? You know, why can't we set a city limit? Why can't we zone our city into zone 1, zone 2, zone... Again, we'll see the same practice abroad and we'll come back saying, wow, wow, wow. But we are refusing, we are resisting change when it comes... And workable change when it comes to our city. We need to go higher. We need to enable easier financing for you to be able to buy. Now, this is where I feel, you know, development economists like yourself need to come in and advise as to how we make... housing affordable for all, you know, and that also needs to be again reconsidered. The way that we're currently doing things, we're making housing schemes to appease certain groups as well. You know, a lot of plots are given as you know, for
bureaucrats get it,
army people get it. Now the judiciary has, you know, their own. The media even has plots now.
Yeah, everybody,
you know?
Everybody.
So everybody has this concept because plus everybody wants to be a landowner.
Why but you see, you that would change if you allow flats.
Yes.
The point is...
Be a space owner.
When you go to London or New York, who wants to buy land? Nobody... You don't even have land.
Exactly.
You think of flats.
Yeah.
So once you change the paradigm, people will start
buying flats. Multiple ownership.
You have to have multiple ownership. So what is stopping... Is there a legal problem for multiple ownership? Is there a law that is necessary?
I believe so. I think currently there's a... This is in conversation that they're trying to... they're trying to encourage multiple ownership in, you know, in on a certain block of
the
land.
The law needs to be made. Huh?
The law needs to be made. The regulations need to be enforced. Okay. Then, you know, they. That's why I feel that city making needs to be there need to be different players on board when you make these decisions. You need to have designers. You need to have planners. You need to have your lawyers. You need to have your economists.
Okay.
And that's not currently happening. That's
a very complex subject, and you need complexity to design the city. You need a number of disciplines, anthropologists, sociologists, everything. But let me ask you another question. So the one function of a city is to get housing. The other city need that we have, as you mentioned earlier, is mobility. But is mobility the way we look at it today, or can we think of other modes of mobility? For example, I see even the US now, every city is developing cycling,
mm-hmm.
and the bicycle paths and the
yes.
bicycle, and you know, lots
yes.
of people are now taking to bicycles.
Yes.
Walking is very, very important in a city. I mean, in fact, people walk in a city. Take any big city, what
Absolutely.
Do we enjoy? We walk.
Yeah.
But here, unfortunately, our planners don't think of walking or bicycling. Both of them are ruled out.
Mm-hmm.
I used to love walking and bicycling. I can't anymore.
Now, you see, what I find just very regrettable is that where there are sidewalks, our developers... because the city allows them. You see, this the planning decision-making mechanism allows them. They come and break through the sidewalk to make a parking lot. So sidewalks are obstructed. Sidewalks are not seen as important at all, you know. And now, you know, you see a little strip of a sidewalk somewhere and you'll celebrate. You're like, oh, look, there's a little bit of a sidewalk, you know. But they're just, it's a matter of time before they're bulldozed through for something else. Now, to answer your question... of course, there's multimodal, you know, transport that we need out here. There's your pedestrian, there's your cyclist, there's your motorcyclist, there's your public transport user, there's your car owner, and we need to now prioritize all those different users. In my opinion, the pedestrian is the foremost important user. Foremost ability to get from one place to other should be to be able to walk there. You exercise your own agency to walk somewhere. So we, however, have completely removed different groups from this decision altogether, and now we're only planning for one kind of mobility, which is a car. And that's unfair. That's absolutely unfair. Why should you just need to be... What if I can't afford a car? How do I get from point A to point B? There are long, arduous journeys that are being created in the city for everyday normal uses, you know. I should be able to get to a hospital if I need to get to a hospital. I should not need somebody to drive me. But that's not possible. I should be able to get to school myself if I need to. I should be able to get to college myself if I need to. But that's not possible.
In fact, if I think about it, would you agree with me? I find that walkable cities are much more enjoyable than car cities. I mean, what do we enjoy about places like London, Paris, and Rome, etc.? You walk.
And you experience. You interact with people. Just that, you know, that feeling of being able to just go out there and grasp the city. And it's in your hand. Here is where I would like to highlight a very good change that we're seeing, again, by way of public transport. Now, you see... Lahore is at a great crossroads in its planning and design history. Public transport is being implemented in a big way, like we mentioned, and this can be a binding user experience. Different social classes, once they start using it, will have to interact with everybody on a daily basis. You will stand shoulder to shoulder with somebody that's going to clean somebody's house or somebody that's going to...
But I'm sorry, sir, right now I don't know anybody who's used the metro.
And we need to change that.
How? How will you get me to ride the metro?
You integrate it so that there is a metro stop near where you live.
No, but why should I?
No, why shouldn't you?
Because I've got a car. I can take my car anywhere I like.
Well, let's make it different.
I can park wherever I like.
Now again, when you're in New York or you're in Manhattan, you're in Zone 1, Zone 2, London. You know how difficult it is to park your car? It's expensive to be a car.
$50.
Exactly.
Easy.
Exactly. My brother, he lives in Toronto. He's rented out his parking space because he's like, I'm not going to own a car. He makes money off of his parking space. Do you see? We need to now de-incentivize the use of the car and incentivize and enable the use of public transport. First and foremost, by connecting it to all different parts of the city.
Okay.
Your first choice, and for example, right now when you make a decision to go from point A to point B and you decide how you're getting there, the reason you're choosing your car is because you're very far from your nearest public transport station. And then if you were near a station, was it going to, you know, convenient places that you need to go to on an everyday kind of run in the city? Chances are no. Public transport is also now just catering to certain groups.
But the problem is that if you say that, and the cost of our metros is right now already $3 billion. If we connect the whole of Lahore, it'll be $20 billion. That's a hell of a lot of money. Can we afford it?
Well, now, this question is basically the cost of bad urban design. You see, if we had done the planning of these projects right in the first place, retrospective integration and design and then additional costs would not have to be incurred. So can we afford it? No, I don't think we can. Will we find debt creating ways to afford it? Yes, I think we will find ways in the future to be, you know, to have to correct mistakes that didn't need to be made in the first place. At the same time, to justify this expenditure, you must integrate. You have to integrate it with your existing transport network. So those are your roads, your streets and everything. Unfortunately, it will have to be done. It has to be done at whatever
but,
the cost.
But let me ask you, because can we do that, as you said yourself earlier, without limiting the use of the car? For example, right now, the way I look at it is, when I drive in my car, I'm subsidized. The person who's taxed is the bicyclist and the walker, the pedestrian. For example, there's not a single zebra crossing in this town.
I can
drive over any pedestrian, that's fine. There's no bicycle lanes anywhere. So I am comfortable. I can go park my car anywhere.
You have the right of way everywhere.
Yeah, and I have no cost to parking my car. 20 rupees at most.
Now 50.
So it's a big deal. But look at it. Lahore is now larger than New York. New York is at least $50 to park your car. You can't park your car for less. Or maybe a little bit at the meters. But the parking garages will charge you $50 easily, maybe more. Right? London has a congestion charge, right?
Absolutely.
And many other cities have a congestion charge now. I think Stockholm has one, or some other cities have one, and New York is planning a congestion charge. Is that something we should consider? First of all, should we have a parking policy? Should we have parking chargeable or not?
And
should
the Lahore Parking Company has really honed in on the revenue generation capacity of all of this, and they're now really kind of enforcing parking lots in the city, and you know they are charging for parking. But like you said, those charges are still minimal.
But you see,
minimal.
I don't think you can build parking lots until you charge for street parking.
Yes,
because street parking forces me to.
To go to the parking lot.
Look at it. When I go to New York or London or Paris or whatever, and I drive, which I seldom do, Washington I drive a little more, but my first choice is looking for street parking because it's cheaper. If I can't find street parking, then I go into the parking lot.
Yes.
But I have no other alternatives.
Yes.
I either have to go to street parking or the parking lot.
Yes.
I cannot park free anywhere. And if I park free anywhere, then I get a ticket.
Yes.
So unless we do that, why would people go into the park? They're building parking lots without having street parking. Street parking is free right now.
Yes.
So what do we do?
So I know that this is in discussion. The Lahore Parking Company, again, is they're looking at metered parking, trying to implement that in the city. So it's a good sign. It's a positive positive direction. Again, and it's happening because of poor decisions that were made in the past. They were not planning for the future. They could have, you know, even in the master plan, they were not thinking.
Sure.
So these are things that were pointed out to our planning decision makers 15 years ago, 20
maybe
years
more,
ago,
maybe more,
you know. There is no dearth of expertise here. There is a resistance to listening. That's what it is. So the Lahore Parking Company is now looking into metering street parking and then the parking lots. So hopefully that will inconvenience car.
But nobody is looking at pedestrians and walking.
They'll have to. Everything is...
No, they might have to in the future.
Yeah.
But not in the near future.
Not in the near future. Absolutely not. I go through all these documents.
There's no recognition.
The pedestrian doesn't matter. Aap kisi ke upar gaadi chada do, you know, you kill somebody. The law is not on the side of the pedestrian. We don't value life here. You know, how it is. We value the car owner. We value might. So might is right and the car is a weapon on the street. And you have that. So until the pedestrian becomes the scale of how you are experiencing the city and who has the right
but
to
that's speak. Also tied into whether you can go high and have flats or not. Because if you've got flats and mixed use, right now the problem is that if I want some milk, I have to drive a few miles to get milk, right?
Yes.
But if I had what I enjoy a lot in many cities in the world is that if I want to have breakfast in the morning, I wake up, go get a cup of coffee, a newspaper...
Yes.
It's right there.
You
don't have to do anything. Just
culture.
Walk, you know, and sit there and read whatever.
Yeah.
And here we don't have that. That will only happen if you have mixed use and high rise.
It will also happen like when you said we discourage people from parking on the street. When you remove cars on the street, you will create space for streets, for sidewalks, for street cafes. You will be able to have a street culture again, you know. And that's how you create vibrant, let's call it placemaking in this, you know, in our jargon. But placemaking is not something
Please
that we're looking
at. Please explain placemaking.
Placemaking is, you know, how you make decisions, what are the series of choices, decisions that a city government takes to create vibrance in its areas. You know, the Center of Public Spaces and Street Making has done they've done amazing research. It's all online now, but you know,
where is the center?
It's based out of the U.S.
Okay.
And they have amazing reports, you know, and case studies that you can refer to, and they apply across the board for a lot of different cities.
So give us an example of placemaking in Lahore, for example.
Okay, so currently it's an elite capture, if you will, but in this Mall 1 area on Main Boulevard, great area that's been developed, you know. You have all these different restaurants that have come up, then you have, you know, hair salons, you have, at one point I was very excited, I heard there was a bookshop coming up there. But that's not coming up now. But there is a bookshop very near it. It's very close to Readings, you know. That kind of nook over there, there's a bit of shopping you can do. There's a bit of lots of eating you can do there. You know, if you want to get your hair done, you can kind of get it done there. That's a nice little space. That's
good coffee
made.
Shops. You can good take your computer
shops,
and work
you
there.
You can sit and work there. However, the cars, the parking nightmare that has been created there, and I've been saying this for so long, if they can just, you know, kind of find a way to eradicate the parking nightmare, you'll create more space for, you know, street vendors will come and set up things there. And they are. There are, you know, you'll find the odd chanawala there or something. So I can be coming out of Mocha after having a pricier coffee. But I can have a great cup of tea on the street as well. And I can have some nice chanas on the side, something like that. So we have to create the space for such things to come about. And that's how you make spaces.
Beautiful.
Make places, you know. And
so making places becomes like a city planning tool then.
Yes.
It's not something that just it happens randomly too. But city makers have to allow that to happen.
You
right?
have to allow it to happen. You have to, you have, like I said, you have to incentivize. And that's where the stakeholder, the developers, the politicians, the planners, they all come, the investors.
Now look, we've discussed two or three things. We've discussed housing, mobility. Tell me, what are the other functions, things that we need in a city?
Public services, you need amenities, you need...
No, for example, one thing that, think about it, that I worry about is our schooling.
Yes.
Where are our schools? I checked with Mona Kasuri and she told me that Beacon House, 75% of its schools are still in houses. Does it make sense to have kids studying in houses rather than purpose-built schools?
You know, I'm on the fence on this one because... whereas I do think it's lovely to have a purpose-built educational environment. I think it really nurtures the student. I'm not a fan of pushing schools out far away from homes. So a lot of times, you know, the people are saying, like we saw this happening in Rawalpindi recently, that people were, you know, everybody had to close down the schools that were in the residential areas. Why are you closing them down? But children should not be have to travel long distances
Absolutely
to go
correct.
To schools.
Absolutely.
So I'm not, like, again, I said, I don't like these islands that we're creating. Push all the schools into an educational industry. Education estate bana di. Ji humne ye bana di. Kyun bhai? Your kid should be able to walk to school.
There's a neighborhood.
So
hamara purana mahalla.
At the same time, I do think here, now our bylaws should allow that agar aapne us ghar ko ek school bana diya, let the school, now let that that structure be retrofitted for education.
Or changed, if you like, rebuilt,
exactly,
finished.
Exactly. So retrofit that space, that land, right? Yeah. But kyunki wo land ek residential use ke liye distayab hua hai ek zamane mein, bas usko ab change nahi karna.
Nahi, pehle wo kyun hua? I mean, think about it. Isn't that just static planning?
It is.
I mean, hey, you planned for a population of 10,000 and now it's 100,000. What the hell do you do?
Who
I mean,
you've
got to grow. You can't just...
And we have exponentially grown. Yeah. Urbanization is upon everybody. Well, this is the urban century.
We should have expected it. If we didn't, we are bloody stupid. But you know.
We have... You see, the thing is, there is a lot of things that inform decision making. You know, we're taught all this all the time. One of the biggest things is information. We've had the information. I don't buy this nonsense anymore. I'm sorry. कि आपने हमें बताया नहीं, आपने हमें समझाया नहीं, सब कुछ बताया था, समझने वाले नहीं बने.
तो data पड़ा है जी.
The data is there.
Data is there.
Who's using it? You don't want to use it, and then you cry horse when things went wrong. I mean, it's unfair.
Population growth has been known to us since the 40s, 50s when you started collecting data. The urbanization has been known to us. Everything has been known to us, except we have to recognize, as you said, there is a neighborhood.
Yes.
Schools have to be a part of neighborhood. Children walk to school.
The neighborhood scale is not being considered. Aapki communities, ji, aapke mohallon mein kya ho raha hai? Your local government laws, you see, the citizen community boards that were in the local governance, the local government act, they need to be reinvigorated. I think they're a great city making tool, you know. Galvanize local, you know, community support, community participation. Your city making should be a deliberative process. Now, again, there is a very condescending vibe, I would like to say, to when we say things like that, that you need to listen to people on a, you know, participatory voices, participatory approaches need to be considered. They think we're talking, the current decision makers think we're talking fluff again. We're not. They have very real, localized impact.
But let me ask you another thing. Now, for example, again, schooling is one thing you've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I think of so many city functions that I don't get. For example, health.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the air in the city is horrible.
Yeah. I actually, now, the work that's being done on air pollution, I recently helped put together a four-pager when I was working with the urban unit on smog. And, you know, just an information pack.
Mm.
Now, I feel information in such an area is very important. Because when we use public transport, for example, information about air pollution and smog and how to protect yourself should be at every metro stop. It should be at every bus stop. These should be, you know, how are you kind of recreating civic awareness? You're not. You're not distributing the information that's necessary. We need to start putting these big, you know, plastering these advertisements, if you will, all across the city to explain how much we are harming ourselves and what are the practices that need to change. So,
but even hospitals, we don't have purpose-built hospitals.
Yes.
We have these small plots on Jail Road that have become hospitals.
Yeah.
We have these small things, etc.
Yeah.
I think city planning on this book that you've got, they've got this thing saying that the urban area, sorry, whatever housing colony comes up, only 5% is for public space, which used to be 2%, by the way. Now it's 5%.
Yes.
And that 5% includes everything, from the mosque to the hospital to the to education to everything.
Yes.
And commercial space is 5%.
Yes.
Right? So, I mean, these, it's 60% is houses, 40% is cars.
Yes.
Can you imagine that? I mean, this shows the weighting of society that we have created in our minds.
Yes.
That 40% is cars, 60% is housing for the rich, right? And then schooling is less than 1%.
Yes. And they don't, and the thing is,
except they say one thing which is very important. They say graveyard is 2%. So they place a greater weight on the graveyard than on schooling.
In Germany, graveyards are not forever.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's very...
Why should they be? Yeah.
You know, again, these are touchy topics, for you know, but it comes down to the use of land, right? And how we're using urban land. Hamari urban land use, there's so many... Our land use rules, regulations need to be changed. There's some things in them that are very good. Those, the good needs to be implemented. The good needs to be, you know, celebrated. Absolutely. I don't think everything is bad, but I think what is very bad, you know, and it needs to be just, you know, reconsidered.
I think I hear you. I think what you're saying is basically what all of us feel. Life is dynamic.
Absolutely.
And we have to have dynamism in what we do. I mean, our urban planning can't be static, just like our life can't be static. Nothing is static in life, and we are kind of freezing urban planning.
Yes.
The other thing that I worry about is, apart from all this, I worry about this thing too. What about community space? You talk about neighborhood, you talk about mohalla, and people talk about connecting people, making strong communities, civic sense, etc. What community space do we have in our country?
And the community space is, A, what do we have? And the ones we do have, how are they being used? Are they being used? So this is, again, when we start thinking from on an urban design level, which is the neighborhood level, the individual level, the user experience, we will start considering these things very actively, you know. There is a desperate need. We've recently, you also did a podcast some weeks back on the youth, the numbers, you know, in Pakistan. And there, you have a young population. Young people need community spaces. They need recreation. They need, you know, exposure to different ideas. They need areas. But we're not creating any. And the ones we do create, they're exclusionary. They're not always inclusionary, you know. So that's something, they're not inclusive.
And I keep saying we have 8 polo grounds in this city.
For whom?
And yes. We have 8 golf courses.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk to kids in universities, I ask them, many of you must be playing golf. Mm-hmm. They say, no. Yeah. So you must be playing polo. So I say, who are they building them for then?
Absolutely.
But these kids have no playground. For example, I don't see a single volleyball court.
Yes.
Which is a cheap sport. I don't see a simple basketball court. Football. You know,
cricket. You don't see cricket.
All you need
anymore.
A ball is to kick around. Yes. Simple.
But unke liye bhi they're going to make a sports city that everybody has to get onto a train or a bus or a car to go to. Why?
Not in the neighborhood.
Why not in the neighborhood?
In any city you see, even in London, or even in, there's always a little crummy little playground with a basketball court or some football, and kids go in there with a ball and they knock
it
out.
This is something where, if I was to summarize, when we go to urban design, we think of the neighborhood scale. Stronger neighborhoods and stronger streets, you know, make for better spaces, they make for livelier cities, they make for vibrant cities. And we need to, you know, I've spoken a little bit about you know, physical design here, but institutional design is what enables all of this.
Please tell us.
And when I talk about institutional design, that's where we go back to these laws and regulations. Mm-hmm. We talk about the decision-making sphere. How is that? How are we making these decisions? What are the institutions that are implementing these regulations as well then, you know? A lot of times we see development has been allowed to happen haphazardly. Then all of a sudden, 2 decades later, they'll wake up to the fact, oh, how has this happened? And then they'll start closing down shops, why were you allowing it in the first place? Because now there are now retrospective things that have come into place, you know? So institutionally also, we need to build capacity, we need to enable our institutions, we need to have, you know, a good design council, an urban design council in Lahore. We don't have anything of the sort. Maybe we need a design body to sit down and advise the government on its new developments, on its existing developments, how to improve them. We need to allow for intervening, to create intelligent interventions. They don't need to be very expensive. I'm not talking about overhaul. I'm talking about strategic urban design interventions.
I did a podcast with 2 urban planners yesterday because they told me this. You criticize us, but you never listen to us. So I said, okay, fine. So these guys, but I found something very interesting. These guys study urban planning, whatever they do. We got about 5 or 6 universities that teach urban planning. And fair enough. We can be critical of what they teach, but it doesn't matter. They're urban planners now. When they come out of university, there's only one place they can go and get employed, which is in urban planning units in cities, right? Mm-hmm. And they told me that their career horizon is getting into the urban planning unit at 17.
Mm-hmm.
And they become grade 19 is the maximum they can go to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you bound them in such a way, 17 to 19, I don't know whether they can be creative or not. So, in a sense, I mean, take a look at the cities that you know about, London, for example, or other cities. Are city planners really sitting there in the junior-most places and doing nothing, twiddling their thumbs? Or city planners have some power?
City planners do have some power. Mm. I think what you're maybe getting, correct me if I'm wrong, is... are we encouraging and incentivizing the planning profession, the design profession, right? Mm-hmm. I personally don't think so. My personal experience is no, absolutely no. There's a rigid...
For example, the LDA call you to come and, hey, help us do this or whatever?
No, I'm sorry. There's a lot of favoritism, nepotism,
hire you as a consultant?
No, maybe not. Why? Because aapne kaam kya kiya ji? Main kehti hu, maine kaam kya kiya, aapne karne kya diya? You know, that's a separate conversation, but they, even when I do get hired, obviously, because they look at the qualifications, they're like, okay, she has the MSc in urban design, you know, she has the bachelor's in cities, etc. But once we're there, and then once we kind of contest the decisions that are being taken, the planning projects that are underway, and we put our input, they say, nay, ye hona aise hi hai. This is how it's going to happen. Every... every advice or any viewpoint is rejected, you know. That doesn't encourage you as a young professional. They don't teach us. I'm not saying they should listen to us absolutely, but if you have us there, let us, you know, teach us as well. Sikhana kuch nahi hai, batana kuch nahi hai, but criticize har waqt karna.
And the next thing is, I don't think, do we have any space for urban research? Is there any urban research being done in this country? Because I find there's an extreme paucity of urban research.
Yes, there. It's being done in silos, but is it being done enough? No. And when it is done, what is done with it? Right? There is a good push within the government actually to create research cells, innovation cells, you know. Even the, I think Urban Unit was discussing it. And I think it's great. You know, the Urban Unit has a lot of potential. I just hope it realizes it and it develops a less rigidity. But currently, urban research is happening, like I said, in silos. The SERP was doing it. They did excellent research on women's mobility. CDPR releases policy notes from time to time on, you know, topics pertaining to the city. But it's not far-reaching. The Planning Commission has done very little work, but some work is there. They can't avoid it for long. I mean, all the work that I have to refer to is all done in Karachi by under Arif Saab's auspices, you know, something.
Yeah, Arif Hasan has been doing.
You know, so Karachi does a lot of research. What do we do?
But it's only RF. Let's face it. It's only RF.
Habib University is now creating some very robust and innovative centers for research there. You know, they have a good faculty. So these, you know, change is happening. It's there. We must acknowledge it. We must allow for integration. Allow the public and private sector to kind of, you know, interact in ways that allow our city experience to be improved. We need to stop being threatened by new ideas.
No, I think you said some very good things today. I mean, I'm very impressed. I've kind of learnt a lot. One is to, hey, we have to be receptive to new ideas. Two is that we have to really think about neighbourhoods and individuals. We never do. We think of cities as an engineering problem, not about people. Right? And the second thing is that we really need to begin to discuss and debate and rethink and reimagine. And we are not doing that enough. We're always stuck in a mold.
Yes.
And that's very sad, unfortunately. But this is why the podcast, limited as it is, hopefully it'll make people think.
We must just sit
so
and
tell me, what else would you... What are the closing words?
Well, I actually, because I think this is such an important topic of our time, and I know that you have young researchers and students listening into this podcast, I wanted to recommend some texts to students that are interested in urbanism and, you know, just learning more about...
That's always my question, last question to people. So please do.
So I had some my favorites, if you will, right, as an urbanist. Authors that I would really encourage people to look into are Lewis Mumford, Kevin Lynch, Peter Jeffrey Hall, J.T. Lang, of course, David Harvey, Ali Madanipur, especially his work on social exclusion and space, Jane Jacobs, you know, she's a prophetess of all of this, Alan B. Jacobs as well, Mike Davis, Sharon Zukin, and then lastly, but not least at all, is Saskia Sassen.
Great.
The global city, and then Arif Hasan locally, Nadeemul Haq, and cities of as engines of growth. I think that was, as a young researcher myself, you know, it was a beacon that came out at the time, and we were so happy to have that collection of essays from our local writers. So I think these are authors that we need to revisit and look back into the core ideas that they were exploring.
Can you do me a favor? Can you just email these essays to me?
Of course, I can be. We can put it in a link
because
under the podcast.
I'll put it under
absolutely.
The, you know, thing, because people who are serious might want to access it.
Yes,
and I'm very happy to facilitate.
I think young architects need it, planners need it, and just, you know, social scientists, they need them.
Yeah. So. Well, Sarah, congratulations. I hope we can have a wider conversation on this. Whatever we can do, I must also compliment you and Urban Unit for starting this series of talks and.
That I had nothing to do with this, but I'm so happy that they're doing it. And again, like I said, the Urban Unit has a lot of potential, and they're opening up avenues. I hope newer ideas are allowed, and
No, I think the youth has come in. Things are changing, I find, even in the universities. Things are happening. And yes, of course, there's some positive to it too.
Yes.
Our job is to try and accentuate the positive.
Absolutely.
Our job is to try and
Absolutely.
Accentuate
work the Work with people, not against them. Do you work with the system, help improve it from within?
And anything that fosters the public debate, I think societies grow with public debates. Let's have a debate. It doesn't matter what your views are. I mean, for example, you mentioned some socialist names in that list that I don't really agree with, but it doesn't matter. They're still great names.
You have, I don't agree with everybody here, but at the same time, there's I need to know what they're saying.
Exactly. And the whole point is, and I keep looking for the day when our people, we also will develop hypotheses and theses that we stand for.
Yes.
Right? For example, hey, I might stand for a more, you know, high-rise city, you may stand for a low-rise city, just to take an example. I'm not saying you do. Or I might stand for a much more melting pot type city. Somebody else might stand for a much more cleaner, segregated city.
Yes.
But, you know, these are things that need to be discussed.
Some kind of a consensus must be reached.
Yeah.
I think we need to have a policy on a loose agreement on the future for our cities.
Absolutely.
Some, you know, aesthetic policies even, you know, uniformity. How are we bringing together uniformity in the city? And that can only happen, like you said, through debate and discussion and letting people talk, giving them spaces to come and talk. And these podcasts are one area as technology is bringing us together, but also physical space needs to be created.
Oh, I think absolutely. I think quite frankly, my view is that Lahore should have at least about 200 talks going on every day.
Yes.
Maybe more.
We should be starved for
it. I know wherever I go to, whether in London or DC or whatever, I mean, I can sit the whole day listening to talks.
Mm-hmm.
You know how many talks there are in UCL, LSE, Imperial College, and then the British Museum, and then whatever. And I don't see why we don't do that here, because that's one way of getting educated, also passing time.
Yes.
Older people like myself, for example, hey, help, you got spare time, go learn something.
Yes.
Why the hell are you sitting around Gymkhana just smoking and doing nothing?
Because maybe the talk is too far away from where you are.
Exactly.
This is the thing, because we've spread the city out so much that, you know, I'm sitting, there's a talk at Lums, but I live in, you know, near Shadra or near the walled city. How am I going to get to Lums?
Right.
You know, for example, I'm saying that there's so many university spaces and, you know, coffee houses that hold conversations, bookshops that hold conversations, but they're just not easily accessible.
Right.
So that hopefully will change.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank
this was wonderful.
Thank you.
This was great. Thank you.
Soch Bachar ke saath, mera naam Nadeem Ul Haq hai. Aur mera naam Anjum Altaf hai.